You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio with myself, Sven Longshanks, and my co-host, Mr. Dennis Wise, the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. And just before I introduce Dennis, I'll just remind listeners that we do have a chat room, we have a live stream, which is playing new content all the time. Every day we have new content on there. You can subscribe to our podcasts. You can also find articles on the podcast, and you'll find all the links in the sidebar to the right. If you click on that, it will take you to the chat room. In the chat room, you can find the radio player there and also talk to other listeners and you can check out the live stream from there as well. You can click on the link and listen to us live. And we are hoping to have some live call-in programs in the next couple of weeks. So now I've got that little bit of advertising out of the way, I'll introduce my co-host. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Fine, thank you, Sven. Yourself?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. I thought maybe today we could cover episode 6 of your Communism by the Back Door, which seems to have stirred a bit of controversy, shall we say, concerning the Druids. Now, I know we spoke briefly on this before, and you said that, you know, you were talking about these modern day Druids that talk about their history going back to the mystery schools of Egypt and Babylon, which is basically Freemasonry. And that's what these modern day Druids are. They're an extension of Freemasonry. But the original, what they've done is they've stolen the original Druid's name. Basically, the original Druids were around at the same time as the beginning of Christianity in Britain, and both Christianity and Druidry were outlawed by Julius Caesar. And Caesar, obviously, he was the enemy of the British people and the enemy of the Druids. So their propaganda at the time was saying things like, well, the Druids, they have human sacrifices and they burn people alive. And it was the Romans that were burning people alive in their wattle huts. That's where this Wicker Man idea came from, because they've never found any evidence of any human sacrifice in the British Isles. So they've never found any of it. So this was just like negative propaganda from Julius Caesar. And the Druids themselves, once they became introduced to Christianity, the arch-Druids, the arch-Flamans, became the archbishops. And the island became Christian. King Lucius pronounced the island Christian in halfway through the 2nd century. And you still had these Druids living alongside the Christians and the monasteries that they had. There were Druidic monasteries. And these Druidic bards, these Christian Druids, basically, they continued right up until the 6th century, when Augustine came over in 597 AD. And he found this church here. There was already this church that had been existing for centuries. And he tried to get this church to be subservient to them, and the church that was already here, the British church, said, well, we'll pay the same respects to you that we will repay to any other Christian, but we're not going to pay respects to the Pope as if he's any better than any other Christian. You know, we have brotherly love and we're in communion equally with all the other churches, and Rome has been our enemy for the last 6 centuries, basically. So this Augustine, he then said, well, if you're not going to join us, then, you know, we're going to be at war against you. And of course, the Saxons then burnt down the Bangor Monastery in AD 613. And the Bangor Monastery, you know, had Druids and Christians in it. So Druidry itself, the original Druidry, was very similar to Christianity from the research that I've done. And of course, then you've got this gap of 1,000 years, and then you've got these Freemasonic types that then pick up on it and start using the name, and they twisted it and they warped it, and it's almost similar to when you look at the way that Hollywood has portrayed National Socialism, and then you get the Hollywood Nazi types that want to be Satanists because they think that the Nazis were Satanists, you've now got the Freemasonic Druidic types that are thinking that Druidism was about human sacrifice. And you've even got the Golden Dawn. So you've got a link with Aleister Crowley there and the Theosophical Society. In the 20th century, they started up this group, or they joined this group called the Universal Bond, which were these modern-day Druids. In 1950, Gerald Gardner, he joined, and he's the father of the witch movement, the Wiccan movement. And you've also got the Freemasonry group, which was called the Ancient and Archaeological Order of Druids. That formed in the 19th century, and that's what Churchill joined. Of course, they do trace everything back to Egypt because they're Freemasons, but they don't trace themselves back to the British Druids. So what they're really doing is smearing the name of the Druids. And
when I went into my own research, there wasn't a great deal to research on. They are kind of the further back you go, they are kind of a mystery. But briefly, what I researched, I mean, I could well be wrong, and it sounds quite feasible what you're saying. It was that they were one of the lost tribes of Israel, tribe of Dan, which ended up they kicked out by the Assyrians. They ended up in Babylon, and this is where they learned the Kabbalah, etc., and the mystics. They then travelled into Europe, went as far as Norway and Sweden, that top end, and eventually became the Druids. This is what I was led to believe, anyway. And then when the Romans was at war with them, Caesar wrote four or five diaries, war diaries, and in one of the diaries went into detail of how he felt they needed to be wiped out, which they did in Central Europe. And then eventually when they came to England, the purge carried on. I think the final purge was in North Wales and Anglesey. And then they went underground. And then from then, I mean, the controversy I got from that particular episode was the fact that I even called them Celts. You know, some people were coming on saying, how dare you associate this mystic from Babylon with the Celts. And so that's where I got a lot of flack from it. And then once they went underground, they emerged again with the Freemason Society, and in fact formed Oxford University. Actually, the Druids did form it, apparently. And from then on, you had people like Rhodes, who was obviously one of the working for the Rothschilds, where they have the Rhodes Scholarship, where people like Clinton and other people from around the world who were thought to have a certain intelligence and charisma and drive could then go and study at this particular university. And then be led out again into the world to preach the preachings of Rothschilds, if you like. And that's more or less what I got up to. So, like I said, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I know the Queen is a Druid, and she doesn't leave London to travel to Wales and become a Druid just for the fun of it. I knew that. You know, there's got to be some kind of meaning to that. I believe Prince Charles is possibly one as well, and certainly the Archbishop of Canterbury. But if I'm wrong, then I'll hold my hand up and say fair enough. But that's how I came to that conclusion. Well, but you're saying anyway, aren't you?
Well, I'm saying that there's a few things that I can add to that. I think the head of Freemasonry is the Queen's husband. I'm momentarily forgetting his name here. He's a head of Freemasonry, so they would be linked up with Freemasonry. And the original Celtic Druids They had 40 different universities in Britain. There was a different university for each tribe, and all the nobility of Gaul would come to Britain to be educated by these Druids. And it would take 20 years to pass a Druidic degree. And to actually be a Druid, you had to show that you had been a free man for 10 generations back. So, you had to not have become a servant. You had to have not, fallen on hard times and had to become a bondsman through not being clever enough. These were really clever, decent people. They weren't allowed to carry any weapons of war. They were never allowed to carry, to take part in battles. They were the healers. So they did have these universities. So Oxford was one of these great seats of learning. But obviously, Oxford University has now been subverted. And the tribe of Dan, the Jews were deported to Babylon. But the tribe of Dan was in ships. Dan was associated with the Greeks and the Phoenicians. This tribe of Dan, they had lots of ships and they were traders. So they were involved with Britain and the Phoenician tin trade going back thousands of years. But they had left before the Assyrians made these deportations, and it was the Jews that were deported to Babylon. So I think what's happened there is that the Jews then from Babylon, they formed their Talmud, they formed their Kabbalah, and they formed all their black magic, which they then took with them into Europe, which they then brought into the Freemasonic lodges. But the Jews didn't actually come into Britain until the 11th century. They came in with William the Conqueror, who brought them in to act as tax collectors. And obviously they were kicked out again a century later due to their usurious practices. And then they were brought back in again by Cromwell. Yeah. It was shortly after Cromwell brought them back in that these Freemasonic lodges came. So I think your research is correct in that these Jews brought over this, the Freemasonry, and they brought it over from Babylon. And then they later on in the 17th or 18th century, they just latched onto calling it Druidry and had this order of the Druids as part of Freemasonry. So I think that's what's, that's probably, closer to what's actually happened. So your research is correct. In a way, and it was the Jews rather than the tribe of Dan. But this is a thing.
Right, well,
go on.
Yeah, well, from what I've gathered, the tribe of Dan came from the Golan Heights, which, if you're into the biblical side of things, is where the fallen angels belonged, or there's some kind of legend that hell is actually up, the entrance to hell is up there.
Mount Hermon. Mount Hermon, I think that might be.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah. So, and I did think, the research did take me into Greece. They moved from Babylon to Greece and then on to Europe. And what puzzles me is that maybe it is, like you say, propaganda. But when you're saying they weren't actually fighting people, according to Caesar, they actually were, but and you do see some old paintings of these people in war battle or battles in wars. So I don't know why they're getting crossed somewhere. And so you're saying they're not the warlike kind of people that Caesar said there was?
No, the British people were warlike. I mean, we had chariots. I mean, when he came over here, we had chariots with metal spikes going out from the rims. And they hadn't seen, the only place they'd seen these before was with the Persians. And we had roads going the length and breadth of the country, because you can't have horse-drawn chariots without proper roads.
And what about the Druids in Europe, though?
Well, and the Druids, they weren't taking part in the wars. They were the spiritual leaders and the judges. And they ran the institutions and the universities and the learning. And you also had the bards and the ovates. So they were part of the institutions of the country, and they were forbidden to pay taxes. They had to, and they were teachers, basically. They were to teach at these universities. But the kings, the chieftains, and their clans and their clansmen were fierce warriors. It was a system that they had in Britain. So the fierce warriors, I mean, because we, you know, the British people were never actually conquered in battle by the Romans. You know, we repelled them, basically. You know, three times, I think it was, that we actually ended up repelling them. But the Druids themselves, they weren't allowed to carry any weapons. And it was, you know, it was a great dishonor to kill one of these people that, you know, weren't allowed to fight, as it were, because they were men of God. You know, a man of God should not be, you know, taking part in the war. The people can, but the man of God shouldn't. So I don't know if Caesar was actually referring to the Druids fighting, or whether I think it's probably more likely to be referring to the British people fighting and talking about these Druids, then trying to give them this bad name. Because Britain was the centre of Druidry.
Because my research took it to the fact that the same people in the Bohemian Grove are linked to all this. They're a homosexual society who meet every so often for a bit of a rave, as you know, out there in Los Angeles. But it says here, I've just got to pull this up here, the author of The False Dawn, the United Religions Initiative, Globalism and Quest for a One World Religion, wrote in 1997, URI Executive Director Charles Gibbs said that I was just in Oxford and we were talking about the indigenous religions. Well, the indigenous religion there is a Druid faith. The ancient order of the Druids was formed at Mount Hamus Grove, which is now Oxford University. The mission of Oxford University today is to train Rhodes scholars from overseas, return to positions of power in their own countries. There they facilitate the transition of their respective cultures from natural sovereignty to global governance. So, you know, like I said, this is where my research was taking me. And obviously the people at the Bohemian Grove are of the New World Order, and the link then with Hollywood, because you get Clint Eastwood's visited, many others have visited, is a homosexual thing, which is one big homosexual rave up.
Oh, and the New Age thing as well. I mean, this is it.
The New Age,
religion and the New Age and Druidry and Wiccan all this pagan stuff is all modern versions of it. It's all part of the New Age. This group that you were saying there from Oxford, I mean, I don't know if it actually says a date when it was formed, but I would lay a bet that it was formed after the 17th century. Once these Freemasonry groups have started calling themselves Druids and started, I would make a bet that it was after that.
Well, it says 1249 AD.
But they think the Druid thing goes back to 1249 AD.
That's what they're saying. Yeah, they're saying that verifies. Says here the Cambridge Encyclopedia entry for Oxford University verifies the gathering of Druid masters and students in Oxford and founding of Oxford University in 1249 AD.
Oh, that's the founding of the modern day university.
It says it's the oldest school. Oxford University is actually the oldest school. This is what it says,
but that's not the founding of the group of Druids that the United Nations are talking about. Right? Yeah, no, that's just the founding of Oxford. Because the Druids that were linked with the original church, that continued up until about the 11th century before it finally got absorbed by as part of the Roman Catholic Church after William the Conqueror came over, and then eventually the church sort of became one with the Roman Catholic Church. So by that time,
I always felt sorry for Harold because he just won a war with the Vikings, hadn't he? 2 weeks later, William the Conqueror lands. So yeah, no, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, difficult sometimes, you know, to find the correct research, especially when it's so long back and so hidden. But at the end of the day, I do believe this what you were talking about, this modern day Druidry in the Oxford University, lays down the fact that the occult teachings in these public schools are there, and the, you know, the magic like organisations of the Golden Dawn, what Crowley linked on to, and then found it wasn't enough for him, formed his own, and went on to other more nastier things with the RTO definitely comes from that ilk. And today Hollywood, you know, and the music industry swear by Crowley, as you know, even, you know, Lennon and the Beatles and all them. So it isn't, you know, it's difficult to get the early stuff, but it does link up to the New World Order today, like you just said.
Well, it's like the Wiccans, that they'll try and claim that, you know, they have this history going back to the witches, and the witches were these healers, and they'll try and say that all these women were persecuted in these witch trials. But when you look into it, they haven't actually got anything that goes back to that time. And the witches themselves, you know, we think of the witch wearing the pointed hat. Well, it was the Jews that had to wear the pointy hats. It was the Jews that were...
That'll surprise me.
That were doing all of this. Yeah, so of course, this is why we're told today that there was this terrible persecution of these witches by the church, because it was the Jews that were being pulled up on these things. You know, they'll try and say that you know, the European people were denouncing, you know, these innocents as witches. They weren't denouncing innocents as witches. They were denouncing the Jews for their Kabbalah and their it's just kidnapping of Christian children and draining them of their blood. And all the other things they used to get on with these Jews used to do in medieval times. So I think that's where this persecution of the witches comes from. And this is why it's promoted, because the Jews love to promote this idea that, you know, there were millions of innocent healers were killed by the church. And they weren't. Yeah. It was Jews. And you can look it up. You can look up in Google Images the pointed hats that these Jews used to have. You've got, I think, put in Jews and pointy hats. You'll see them. There's lots of paintings of them with these pointed hats.
Tune in to Radio Stormer on thedailystormer.com.
Well, I remember that Nicolas Cage, who made the remake of the. Of the Wicker Man, he's heavily into Freemasonry. He's even ordered a tomb which is shaped like the triangle of the New World Order. And I think he's got a film company. I can't remember its name now, to be honest. If I can find it on the net, I will do while I'm talking. But and that is linked. You know, the actual name of his film company is linked to the Druids and Freemasonry. So yeah, Hollywood is very much into all this, you know, and the Crowley aspect, as is the music business, because it's run by the same people.
Well, yeah, they're trying to legitimize what they're doing. They're trying to legitimize it. And if you look at the picture of there's a quite a famous picture of Crowley, and he's got this this headdress on, and it's the same headdress that these modern day druids are wearing. And it's a basic, it's like a Masonic club that they have.
Yeah.
Now, I think the head of the or Rowan Williams, he used to be the head of the Anglican Church. He was part of this Masonic club, calling themselves the Druids as well. So it's all about them trying to gain some legitimacy for what they're doing for this one world religion. So they try and make out that it's, you know, it's an indigenous religion, and all roads lead to the same God, and it's the same God in you know, in Islam, that it is in Christianity, that it is in Judaism. And then they'll tame down and dilute and distort the actual teachings of those religions to try and make them out to be the same. And of course, you know, that all leads to, you know, the God of multiculturalism, you know, which is the anti-God and the anti-race.
Nationalism,
yeah.
Well, I found out his company is called Saturn Films. So as you can, you know, Saturn goes back to the old Satan mythology. So he's heavily into it, is Nicolas Cage, as is, you know, most of Hollywood. I think you have to be in it to actually have a career in Hollywood these days. Because if you're not in the club, as we've said, then you're not going to get anywhere. And the Queen, again, is, you know, that royal bloodline, they claim to come from Jesus Christ. But again, I got research saying they're from Dan. But again, I could be wrong, you know. But what does amuse me about Crowley is that these people who don't believe in religion or anything like that, these, you know, are these people who believe in the occult. Crowley obviously believed in Christ because he wanted to replace him anyway. So, you know, there's a, it's an interesting subject, let's to say the least.
Yeah, with these bloodlines, you can look back, and most of the family trees of royalty like to claim that they go back to either gods in some case, like Odin or Woden, or, you know, if you can look at Lawrence Gardner's work, which traces them back to the Holy Family of Jesus.
So yeah, well, they said he married, well, whether he married her or not, like, but she supposedly had his child, and the bloodline carried on, as in the Da Vinci Code. But that's a claim, you know. I don't believe it myself, but, you know, I could be wrong there as well. Who knows?
You've also got the legends of Joseph of Arimathea, who supposedly came over to Britain soon after the resurrection with Lazarus and with Mary with him, and built the first church at Glastonbury, which was supposedly the first church building above ground. And Joseph of Arimathea, he was given, he was paid the same respects that was paid to a Druid. He was given 10 hides of land and exempt from paying tax. And the church itself is noted in the Domesday Book from when William the Conqueror came over and wanted to find out that, you know, who owned all the lands and what taxes were paid. And it's written down there. And Joseph of Arimathea was, his family intermarried with the, you know, the Celtic ruling kings of the time. So you had this original royal family that was in Britain that traces back to Brutus from Troy. And then, of course, later on, you then get the Anglo-Saxon royal families coming in the 5th or 6th century. They trace themselves back to Odin and Woden. And one of them, actually, in King Alfred the Great, if you look at his family tree, he traces himself back to someone called Scaf or Skeef, who was apparently one of Noah's sons. So the and you don't know if Skeef or Scaf is, it was one of the ways of saying Shem, possibly, or whether it was, you know, an extra son that isn't actually written about in the Bible. But he traces himself back to Noah.
So what's the situation with King Arthur?
Well, King Arthur, he was a Christian king. He was descended from Constantine the Great, who was a British king that became the Roman emperor that legalized Christianity.
Right.
He was descended from him. This is from what I've learned from the research that I've done. And King Arthur went into Europe. And, I mean, he had an empire that stretched from Brittany to the Baltic. And then he had to come back to England because there was trouble going on in England when he left, with Mordred, and I think the Scots invaded into England as well.
Right, because Prince Charles is linked back to King Arthur in some way, or the, what's he called, Prince of Wales today, Harry, is it? No, that's the other one, isn't it?
Well, they'll try and, you know, have these tenuous links to them. Yeah. But King Arthur, I mean, he went right the way up to Rome because the Romans were trying to get tithes from him. They were trying to get him to pay tax, and he went all the way up to Rome.
Sounds about right.
Fought his way to Rome and said, well, no, you owe us tax, you know, because our kings were on the throne of the Caesars way back, and he listed it. And this is in the Chronicles of England, where there's a compilation of all the earliest reports. You know, you get like the Book of Chronicles in the Bible, and you get the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. Well, there is also a Chronicle of England. It's called the Brute, named after Brutus, King Brutus, the Brute, or the Chronicles of England. And it has all the oldest manuscripts in there, which told the history of the country. And it's got a copy of, you know, what he actually said to Rome. But then, of course, he had to come back again. But there's more than one Arthur as well. there's an Arthur I and an Arthur II. And Alan Wilson has done the research into this, and I must admit I haven't actually read his book on it. So I'm only going by what I've read in the Chronicles of England about Arthur. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the royal family probably would try and trace themselves back to them. But when the Tudors came in, apparently when the Tudors came in and they took the throne, the Tudors were descended from the original Cymric kings, the original Celtic kings that were on the, that were ruling the island before the Anglo-Saxons came. And there's a link between the Cymry, the indigenous Britons, and the Normans. So when the Normans came back in, there was a slight link with them. And when the Tudors came onto the throne, then you had this original Celtic bloodline back on the throne. Right. But of course, the ones that we've got now, I think, are I'm not too up on their descent. But I know that they were linked to the Tsar of Russia. And, you know, why they didn't go over there and, you know, and do something about the fact that he'd been assassinated, I think that shows you that, you know, that the British line was corrupted, you know, at that point. Most of the royal lines were corrupted at that point because something really should have been done about that. Because they were all intermarried. I mean, this was the way they thought, well, we can prevent wars between us if the royal families intermarry with the other royal families. This is why they weren't supposed to marry anyone that wasn't of royalty. This is why it was such a shock to see this Prince William marrying this, you know, this Kate, who some people have said, you know, well, she's a Jewess. You know,
Worse. I mean, well, Diana was linked to the Rothschilds, wasn't she? She was a Jew as well, I believe.
Could be. You know, I don't think we can hold out any hope of royalty anymore. You know, royals have sold us out. You know,
I think this baby George was going to be the first full-blooded Jew on the throne, I think.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, what's this Kate's surname? I mean, it's Gold something, isn't it?
Yeah,
sort of
Goldstein or something, yeah.
Goldstein. Yeah. It's the thing, right? Imagine that, having a...
They changed their names that many times anyway, don't they, to be honest?
Yeah, this is the thing, that, you know, they changed their names. I think one of the worst possible things that happened was accepting them into the church, saying if they said they were a Christian, then that was it. I mean, this caused all manner of trouble. And that's what the original Inquisition was about, was because of these Jews said that they were Christian and then continued to carry out their Jewish practices.
So they
had to find out, didn't they, these Muranos, and find out who
were the Jews. I don't think it helped Britain's cause with the Templars coming over as well, because they dealt with usury, didn't they, when the French king tried to wipe them out. I believe, anyway, like I said, I may be wrong, but, you know, the Templars have been to Jerusalem, and I believe they found the mystic secrets and went on to be really wealthy, charging usury as well. So I believe they ended up something like 1,100 and something over here in Scotland.
I was going to say, I was going to say, where did your researches lead you to with the Templars? Because you explain first where your researches led to with the Templars.
Well, from what I could gather, the French king at the time wanted to break them up, and that's where they get the Friday the 13th, where the leader was burnt at the stake of the Templars. And they scattered them. Some escaped to Scotland, to the priory up in Scotland. There's a church up there. Can't quite remember the name there, but
Roslyn Chapel.
Yeah,
I've been there.
That's the one. Yeah. Have you really?
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's quite an amazing piece of work. You know, the sculpture there. It's some incredible things in there. You know, like monkeys with angel wings. Which sort of predates the theory of evolution, and you know, they've got fruits from, I think, corn on the cob there, which hadn't been discovered at the time.
That's a mystery in itself, isn't it? But what I would say with the Knights Templar, you know, they would have been involved in Freemasonry at some point, which would have all linked up to this. the events today with, like I said, with the Rothschilds and Rhodes scholarship, everything all leading to this one world order, which they've had in mind for quite some time. But like I say, it's difficult. It is difficult because there's lots of variations. And one can only do, I mean, you've obviously done a great deal of research yourself, Sven, I can tell, you know.
Well, I looked into the Templars and I come to the same conclusion as you. I think that, they were the original formation of the Freemasons, and some mm-hmm. of them escaped over to Scotland, and they were involved in banking. I'm not sure whether it was usurious banking or not. That's something
I believe it did.
Right, well, it must have been, mustn't it? If the king was so much in debt to them. And he tried to get rid of them. So I've always thought, well, Friday the 13th might be unlucky for the Jews and the bankers, but it should be lucky for us. It's a good day for us.
We should celebrate. But I think Freemasonry goes back even further. But, in one of the videos that I do mentions that Freemasonry went right back to King Herod originally.
Well, what's the link with that? Of course, there's the head that John the Baptist's head as well that Herod apparently chopped off. I mean, some of the Templar research, they have this head that they talk about, and some people believe that it was John the Baptist's head that they actually had, and that was what this baphomet was.
Well, that's from what I can remember. That's the dance of Salome, and she. She danced for the king and they had some kind of a deal or something where John the Baptist's head were brought out on a plate. But I don't think she initially wanted that to happen, but it was twisted to such a degree. That's the Hollywood version from what I remember anyway. But from what my research showed me, that King Herod was, there was a mystic force of Jesus, which they understood. They wanted to counteract that. With their own mystical force. And so they formed a society which they used to meet in Herod's temple. So that was, I believe, from what I can gather, the foundings of the Freemasons. And this went on, to include the Kabbalah and everything else eventually. But it's in, I think it's part of... 5 or 6 of the documentary. I can't remember all the details now, but I have I think he's a friar who has researched all this, and the whole episode is based around his explanation of it all. So, but I can't remember which part it was. I haven't seen it for a while. Excuse me. But that's what he says, that it dates right back to the days of Herod.
Well, that would make sense. No, that would make sense. I think we can trace most of this back to the Jews being in Babylon.
It's Jewish to the core, I believe. Yeah, the actual Freemason idea of it all is.
Well, if you look at
which Herod, is why Hitler was wary of it, obviously.
Yeah, well, if you look at Herod, and Herod was an Edomite Jew. Flavius Josephus, the historian, writes about how Herod was one of these Edomite Jews, and they had infiltrated the Pharisees, they'd infiltrated the priesthood, they'd put this king on the throne, and they were basically this alien force that was in Judah that had taken over all the institutions, exactly the same as what the Jews have done today. And these Edomites, they moved into the land of Judea, or the land of Judah, while the descendants of Judah, the Judahites, were in Babylon. And then, of course, some of these Judahites came back to Judah to rebuild the temple after King Cyrus took over Babylon, and he said, well, some of you, if you want to go back there, you can go back there. And a very small amount of the tribe of Judah that were actually deported to Babylon went back to Judah. And in the second century before Christ, this John Hyrcanus, this is written about in the Book of Maccabees, he forced all the Edomites to get circumcised. And then said, well, now you're the same as us. You're these Judahites. And at that time, you know, you had these Edomites who were who had always been the enemies of the Judahites, and they're cursed by God. And you also had these bastard children, which these Judahites had produced as well. There's another book, two books in the Bible deal with this, Nehemiah and Ezra, where these Judahites had all these bastard children, and they were told to get rid of the bastard children and get rid of their strange foreign wives. So you had bastard children, foreign wives, all these Edomites just come back from Babylon, where they'd learn all about the Babylonian magic. So then this is when the Talmud started to take form, the commandments, the teachings of men. This is what Jesus called the teachings of men, because he was obviously against all of this, and the Jews he was speaking about being against these Jews were these bastardized Edomite Jews and these bastardized descendants of Judah, basically. Sure, so this is where it's all taking form, and Herod was one of these. Herod was highly placed one.
I've got this part here. Sorry, I've got this part here where we're talking about you. I don't know if you can hear it or not. Just give us a second.
Well, what we know as Freemasonry came most recently from the Order of the Knights Templar movement in the 1300s. Actually came before that, in the year 43 AD, from a group called the Mysterious Force. That's actually where Freemasonry came from. And this following information is from a book called The Origin of Masonry. The Mysterious Force was established in 43 AD, and it started when a counselor to King Herod Agrippa came to him and complained that the followers of Jesus had a mysterious force. So the purpose of this group was to attack the teachings of Jesus, and that they should establish their own mysterious force in order to preserve Judaism. King Herod Agrippa said, quote, "We will use the hammer because it was used to nail Jesus' hands and feet. Every session will be opened by striking the hammer three times," end quote. And you notice the judges have the hammer to bring order to the court.
Okay, well, he's tying even the judges today when they bang down three times and when they enter the court, you know what I mean, to it all. So that's how far he went back, you know, to Herod.
Well, this fits in again with Simon Magus. And he thought that the apostles had this magical force, and he tried to purchase it for money.
Right.
So that, you know, that would be a similar thing to what Herod was trying to do. So you know, Simon Magus, the father of the Gnostics, and Gnosticism all links in with the Freemasonry and the Jews as well. I mean, it was the Jews that were promoting this Gnosticism and this Gnostic idea. The God was the bad guy, and materialism. They were very into their materialism, and also this idea that some people have got a secret teaching and they're better than all the rest, and only if you're really clever can you understand the secret teaching. This is the appeal that Gnosticism has. This is the appeal that a lot of this stuff has to people today. They think that only they can understand it, and they're cut above the rest.
Supremacy. Yeah. Jewish supremacy.
They can understand the secret teachings of it. And this is a Jewish way of looking at things. You know, this is the Jewish Talmud. Yeah. It tries to tell you that everything in the Bible is the opposite of what it actually says.
Yeah, me and your castle.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
this is the way that the Jews have always operated. They're a force. You know, they've been a force against us, against the white man, you know, going all the way back. You know, before they're even called Jews, you know, there was bankers and people promoting this materialism and this hedonism. And race mixing. And you look at in the Bible, and it talks about the Tower of Babel, where you had all these different nations together, and they decided that they would create their own nation. You know, they wanted a name to make a name for themselves. You know, they wanted to make their own race, basically, through race mixing.
Yeah, well, wherever they've gone, they claim to have been persecuted, but, like I said early on in one of the episodes we did, you can't always blame the landlord.
You can't. Well, this is just it. I mean, they constantly cry and wail about this persecution, but why is it always them? Why is it always them that have been removed from, 109 countries?
Exactly.
107 of them were Christian countries as well. It's Christians that have removed them, not pagans.
For sure, for sure. I think, you know, the secret of it all is, if ever we're going to get this world back on, to take away the power of the finance from the bankers, take that away, and I think that'll start us on the right foot, exactly what Hitler did. Because when they've got this infinite amount of money, they'll always outspend us on whatever we do. Got to take away that financial power away from them. Once we do that, then things will fall into place, I think.
And usury, the adding of the interest on top, which is
exactly
completely
never-ending debt.
Yeah.
Never-ending debt.
It's completely unjustified. No. It was a mortal sin in the church for, you know, 1500 years.
Centuries. Yeah.
It was
slavery. It's actual slavery. I mean, I remember somebody talking the other day, like, and they said, like, in America now, like, you know, the white race has joined the black brothers now as slaves because of this financial system, and that's exactly what it is. It is a slave system. And people are going to work and not earn enough money even to survive. It's a trap. It's a trap that we're all in. But the answer is, I think, is for the, you know, take that financial power away from these bankers and the world will start to come right again.
Well, it's insane when you think about it, to think that, you know, the country borrows money from a private bank, which just creates the amount that the government wants to borrow, and then the people then have to pay the taxes to pay that back, and it all goes back to this private bank, which is run by the Jews.
It's a simple but vicious system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and the people have worked out that it's a vicious system for a long time, but then the Jews will try and distract you. It's like Karl Marx. If you look at Marx's stuff that he wrote about the bankers, instead of pointing out that it was through interest and through compound interest and usury that these people were draining all the wealth from the people, it was all about, look how much more money these people have got. They've got much more money than you. So this isn't right, because we're all born, you know, the same. They shouldn't have more money than you. Go and get it back off them. But with no mention of usury. So that just sows discord and envy. Whereas,
well, what I noticed mainly is people who, the less they come here and said, well, I admire the Jews because, you know, they built themselves up from nothing and, you know, they made themselves into these rich people and whatever, like, and they don't realise they stripped the shirts off their back to get there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hitler pointed out that it was usury that had done this. It was this usurious capital that was draining all the wealth from the people and draining all the wealth from the industry. They weren't actually creating any industry to make that money. It was all just from putting interest on top of what they loaned out. I mean, back then,
there was no work involved. Certainly no work involved.
Yeah, the church used to look on it as that was stealing from God. Usury was up there with sodomy as one of the, you know, the worst possible sins, almost as bad as murder.
Yeah,
I mean, Alfred the Great, in his law code, you know, it's the same as murder. You would lose everything. You would lose your house. You would lose your business. You weren't allowed to leave anything to your descendants. Now, usury was serious crime.
Nothing's changed. Same happens today.
In the Bible, you know, usury is to be used as a weapon of war. You're only allowed to use it against your foreign enemies. You know, they were told to use it against foreign enemies, never amongst themselves.
Yeah, but the Jews have certain rules, don't they, for themselves? They may fall out over certain things.
I don't know if the banks are banks, aren't they? I think the Jews use usury amongst themselves. I don't think they don't use it among themselves.
Well, no, I'm thinking more of the ideology of communism and capitalism. Like, you know, you've Jews in both them worlds, like, and they sometimes fall out over the ideology of things, like, but they'll always come together against, you know, they will never stand with non-Jews. They'll, you know, the Jewish will always stand with their own.
Well, they always have this illusion, don't they, of being separate to one another, you know, this illusion of the right and the
left. Yeah, it's an illusion. Yeah.
I mean, even this right and the left, I mean, that goes back to Pharisees and Sadducees. You know, this idea that you can't have people representing everyone. It's got to be one group fighting against another all the time.
All the time, yeah. They do it in many ways, aren't they? Black v. white, Muslim v. Christian, whatever. But they'll all stand back on the sidelines and watch them destroy each other, you know. Well, they're the focus of it all.
Well, draining all the money from the nations involved by loaning them out the money for armaments. Because this was the other thing that Hitler did. You know, he stopped them from profiting from the sale of arms. Anyone that was profiting from the sale of arms from these war loans would have the money taken off them. You know, this was a serious crime to be making the money from war. So, you know, it's making the money from other people's misfortune. Again, this is usury, isn't it? It's making the money from other people's misfortune. They haven't got enough.
It's anti-Christian.
Yeah, but
it's Jewish, isn't it, more or less? But I found out the other day that ISIS, the injured of ISIS, were being treated by the Israelis on the Golan Heights for injuries in the wars, you know what I mean?
Oh they've been doing this for a while.
Raise the question: Why haven't ISIS or Al Qaeda and all these fake enemies? They've never attacked Israel.
Well, they've been doing that for a while. You know, the injured from the groups that are fighting against Bashar al-Assad, they go straight over into Israel, where they get treated in the hospitals there.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
And that's been going on for a while, this...
Right. No, I came across it the other day. It's like, I mean, obviously, America has the fingerprints all over ISIS as a... just like there'd be the Al-Qaeda thing. So, and obviously Israel every now and again throw an airstrike at Syria. So it all, two and two make four. It all adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, they fund these wars, they start these wars, and they sit back and make the money from it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a big money-making scam for them.
Yeah, well, you see ISIS driving around in these brand-new Toyota trucks, don't they? They must come from somewhere. And all these arms. And they, you know, most people struggle to buy weapons over here, but they don't seem to struggle, do they?
Well, it's not just, you know, they're not just being funded by Israel, are they? They're being funded by Saudi Arabia, and they're being funded by America as well. I mean, Obama, his solution to ISIS is to fund Sunni rebels. Sunni rebels are ISIS.
Yeah. Well, they call them moderate rebels, aren't they, some of them?
Moderate rebels.
We won't fund ISIS, we'll fund the moderate rebels. So, wonderful. As if you know what a moderate rebel is. No, it's crazy, man. It's crazy.
Just to go back to this idea of usury and profiting from other people's misery. I mean, but before, up to about the 15th century, we had these guilds. And this is what fascism, Benito Mussolini's fascism, he reinstituted these guilds. And these guilds ensured that there was a just price. They ensured that you couldn't profit from somebody else's misery. You know, if there was an earthquake and you needed lots of building materials, there was laws in place to prevent people putting the price of the building materials up. They would actually put the price of the building materials down so that people could afford to get things right. And things that were needed for society were subsidized so that everybody could afford them. And this was called the just price. And the guilds were involved with it, and the church was involved with it. And this is what... Mussolini was reinstituting again with these guilds and with these corporations. And you get people now that say, oh, well, fascism was all about the corporations and corporatizing things. And is this a mistake in the understanding of what the corporation actually was? And it was a guild of the workers and the bosses trying to get the best for everyone and to make things, you know, right for everyone. So instead of having these people competing against one another and keeping their secrets from the other businesses, you know, you had everybody working together to produce the best for the nation. So that's what their corporatizing was and what their corporations were. It wasn't like these multinational corporations today, which is all about having
a monopoly.
And charging the highest price you can and making the most.
Well, it's always annoying me. I mean, you've just reminded me this week I've been traveling up and down the country, like, and it's always annoyed me that the service stations on the motorway charge the highest prices for everything when they've got a ready-made traffic going driving past it all the time. I mean, why the petrol prices and the food prices and everything so high when they're, you know, the market's just outside the door? Completely does my head in, to be honest. You know, this should be the cheapest of the options.
Well, it's all back to front, isn't it? This is what happens.
All back to front.
This is what happens when you allow a foreign force to infiltrate your country's infrastructure and dictate, you know, how the economy should work.
Yeah, and then the next is the foreign policy, and suddenly your country's, you are paying taxes towards, in what is supposedly a democratic country, towards a foreign entity which makes decisions that you have no say in at all.
Never have a stranger, you know, on the throne, as it were, you know, having foreigners allowed into the government as part of the political parties. And look at what they're saying now. They're saying, well, we need more diversity in government. We need more non-whites in the Tory and the Labour Party. I mean, it's sickening. They're just replacing the original people with foreigners. And to go on,
well, somebody said the other day on the news, like, it says, like, that multiculturalism has been a good thing. And I can't think of one good reason why it has been. And he didn't say, so that left me wondering. But can you throw some light on that? Because I can't see any positivity from a multicultural society.
No, it's just
apart from the odd kebab.
Well, it's just a mantra that they have to repeat in order to actually get anywhere. And I was going to say, and further on from that, from allowing this alien force into the country and allowing it to have these positions of influence, we've now given away our sovereignty entirely to the European Union. Again, which is run by Jews. It started off by the Jews. It was their plan that it was put on hold during the war, and then after the war, they were able to institute it. And this is why the reasons for it keep changing, but nobody's ever wanted it. Nobody's ever wanted it, but it's been
implemented, hasn't it?
Where they control the academic posts in the universities, then they can keep promoting it. And every time people catch on to it and say, "Well, hang on a minute, this isn't actually preventing any wars," they'll come up with a new idea for why it's there. Oh, yeah. It's not there for preventing wars; it's there to enable trade between the different countries. And when you say, well, you know, we can trade in other ways, oh, well, it's there to allow free movement between the countries so that, you know, we can have cheaper workers. Well, that's just replacing all the indigenous workers with foreign workers and keeping the wages down.
Cheap labour, slave labour.
Diversity has never been any good for anyone in any form. You can look back, just bring up a biblical example. You know, what did these big empires, the Assyrian Empire and the Babylonian Empire, do? Well, they picked up people from one nation from one country and then they deposited them in another country. You know, they tried to create diversity. It was used as a weapon of war way back in the 6th or 7th century BC. You know, that's what the Assyrian Empire did. It would take over a country and deport the people from there to somewhere else.
It kind of like bred that enemy out, in other words.
Yeah, and then you look at what did the communists do? Well, they did exactly the same. Yep. They removed one portion of people from one country and removed them to another and mixed them in with another country. It's always been used as a weapon against the people of the original nation to create division amongst them. If you look at the phrase, a house divided, you know, will not stand.
Exactly.
And that's what diversity is. It's a house divided. It can never be a strength. Yeah. I mean, that's an old adage that it comes from the Bible. A house divided against itself will not stand. So how?
There's so many forces working at the same time. It's unreal. when especially when people are living in apathy, you got the Freemasons are working 24/7. Then you got your Jews working 24/7. You know, you've got your government's trying to bring in diversity 24/7. Oh, it's all going 24/7 and nobody even knows it's going on half the time.
Well, that's at the root of it. I mean, if you just had a homogenous people of one type, you know, you just had one white nation without any Jews, without any non-whites, without any blacks, you would have a paradise on earth pretty much. You know, you would have another Third Reich. You'd have people working together. You wouldn't have any crime. If you just look at Britain a century ago, there was no crime in Britain. You could leave your back door unlocked. You could leave your front door unlocked. Nothing would get stolen. And you look at where we've come from then to now, stabbings on the streets, teachers being stabbed, you know, people breaking in while you're actually in the house and stabbing and raping the people that live in there.
Yeah.
All just within a century. And this all comes from bringing in other races and mixing them up. And you would think you'd learn from the Red Squirrel. Before this all started, the Grey Squirrel came over into Britain and practically wiped out the Red Squirrel.
Yeah.
We saw it happen in nature. And then we still allowed them to start importing people from different races. Madness.
Well, I asked on a YouTube comment once, what is racist about Germany having a pure race, or the Italians having a pure race of Italians, or the English having a pure race of English? What is racist about that? This is all twisted and upside down. You know, you think a country would have a pure, its own pure race of people in it, but obviously, this world today, that you're being a racist by even saying that.
Love for your race, you know, that's the highest kind of love that there is. It's not lust, you know, it's not a lust for a carnal pleasure. It's a love for your people. It's a love for your family.
Keeping your heritage and, you know, it's all to do with, you know, your own being. But when you've got a country full of diverse races and whatever, then you've got no history.
And of course, once you've got no history, then you've got no link between you and the other people, and you're not going to be able to form any resistance against...
You're not going to go over the wall, are you? Exactly. You know, there's no way you're going to go over that wall because you've got nothing, no love for your own being, because you're just a mongrel.
And people are starting to wake up to that more and more now. I mean, this word racist, it just doesn't have the power that it used to have anymore.
No, but they use these politically correct laws and things, which in many ways, you know, it's, you know, the most people who were unaware of all these things think it's a good thing. You know, to have a law that stops me from saying the N-word, you know, is a good thing. But, of course, it goes on to other things. And you know, it is, in effect, a prison in itself where the state is telling you what to say, what to think, how to say it. You know, they get away with it because it's politically correct.
And it's self-censorship, isn't it? I mean, what I was saying, I mean, because they've pushed it so far now, you know, locking people up for saying words these forbidden words, and trying to pushing this diversity so much on the television all the time, and trying to encourage us to accept, you know, these invaders from Africa and their ships, as ships of doom coming to our country, because they're pushing that so much. People are saying, you know, well, we've had enough of this. I don't care if you call me racist. I really don't. And this is why we're seeing more nationalism in Europe. This is why we're, you know, the narrative is changing. It is moving in our direction. You know, people are sick of it. You know, I talked about this just recently on this podcast with Andre. You know, in private, behind closed doors, people are becoming more and more racist, and they're realizing that it's the right way to be. And it just needs to break through into the public. And the way to get it to break through into the public is for podcasts like this, is for us to take over this on the internet and make it acceptable.
Robert Murdoch's mainstream, you know, media is never going to push that agenda. And that's the problem. It has to be through the internet and the podcasts. It's on the way.
Well, that's why we'll keep making them, and hopefully people will enjoy them, and we'll pass them around to their friends and family, and get them to realise what's going on and who it is that's behind it and what we need to do to stop it. And I think we should probably round this podcast off there, Dennis. If you want to let people know your websites where they can find your work.
Yeah, again, it's thegreatestorynevertold.tv. And for the moment, there's about 8 parts up on YouTube on the Dennis Wise channel of Communism by the Back Door. Hopefully, you know, if I have to redo some episodes because I got the research wrong, then I'll look into that as well.
Well, I think it's been a good podcast today discussing that. You know, I've I definitely learned something from you there, and I hope listeners have learned something as well. So, thank you very much for listening, and we do hope you'll tune in again next time.